Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
Nothing, it's good.
Then what are you doing with it?
I'm just helping. It's a little fuzzy.
May I have it?
I don't think you're saying what you mean.
I know exactly what I mean.
Not here. I can't tell from this whether Hunt works for Coulson or Coulson works for Hunt.
May I have it?
You need some of your conclusions.
May I have it?
Yes, I'm not looking for a fight.
I'm not looking for a fight either.
I'm just aware of the fact that you've only been here 9 months.
What has that got to do with anything?
Well, I've been in the business since I'm 16.
What are you saying?
Well, I'm trying to tell you that if you'd read mine and then read yours...
May I read yours?
Yeah. I walked by, gave yours a glance. It didn't look right, so I just figured I'd refine it a little. That first paragraph has to have more clarity. The reader's going to understand it. You don't mention Coulson's name for the third paragraph. I think mine's better, but you go ahead and read it. If you think yours is better, we'll give yours to the desk. I've got Coulson's name up front. He's a White House consultant and nobody knows
right.
it.
Yours is better.
Hello and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
It's end of January, and we had planned, I just want to say right off the top, that we'd gotten a really wonderful suggestion for this week to do The Women. But I'm sure if you're listening to this, you see that that's not what we're going to be talking about today.
More men.
And that's only, more men. Really a lot of men, but we really wanted to do The Women, but we weren't able to get the text in time, but we are planning to do it. As soon as we get our hands on the source material, we will be delighted to cover The Women. So we thought, since we are wrapping up inauguration week here in the United States, maybe we should do something presidential. Yes. And so this week we decided to do All the President's Men. We are so excited to talk about it. But before we get to that, if you are new, there's a few places where you can interact with us, make suggestions for books and movies, and meet other listeners of Book Versus Movie on the internet.
Yes. If you want and you like Facebook, we do have a Facebook group. So just what you type in is Book VS Movie Podcast Group and you ask to join. It is a private group and it's just a place where we talk about books and movies and ideas for future episodes. A lot of people like to hang out there. So you do that for Facebook. We're on Twitter at Book Versus a Movie. You spell those out. We have an email, bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. And we also have an Instagram. You can send us messages there. We'd love to build our Instagram following. So look for Book Versus Movie Podcast there.
Now, I'm sure today's book is available on Audible, although I downloaded it for free from the Libby app for my local library.
It's easily available. This book is easily available, but it is on Audible. So if you want to try Audible, it's audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie, and you have a month to check out their service for yourselves. But I actually listened to it. I forgot, Margot. I did listen to it. I played it overnight, and it was kind of creepy and fun.
Oh, wow. Who reads it?
Oh, I forget the person. I'll look it up later. I'll put it in the show notes, but it's nobody
famous.
It's not
Woodward or Bernstein?
Not Woodward or Bernstein or Redford or, you know, Dustin Hoffman, so... Just a person.
Oh, okay. And we do have, don't we have a couple of new Patreon members?
Yes, we do, Margot. We have two new Patreon members. They are VJ and Jackie and I have been friends for 25 years. She's a big fan of the show. She lives in England, and she's been telling all of her friends to check us out, and she's supporting the show. Thank you so much, Jackie. That's so kind of you to do that. But we're just putting all of our episodes from 2018 and then previous to that are starting to go up to be on that Patreon wall. We have almost 70 episodes there. Some of them are free, so just go there to check it out if you want to. But we have a couple of affordable options, and we really appreciate it. And if you support us at the $5 level a month, we will do the book and movie of your choice. We do have, and this is just for everybody, for your suggestions, it needs to be something we can actually get our hands on, meaning the book has to be on a Kindle or on the Libby app, or if it's a paperback, we have to be able to get in, you know, not, it doesn't have to be one of those expensive things. It can't be like an item like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, for example, which has never been republished. So those paperbacks go for like $70 on the market. We can't do that. Also, the movies have to be streamable. And that means they have to be no DVD and no VHS tapes. We just can't do this because neither one of us have those on hand. So just keep that in mind when you're offering us suggestions. And Margot and I, because we're now doing this weekly, we've opened it up. So we're doing plays, we're doing short stories, we're doing kids' books, we're doing magazine articles, we'll be doing songs. That's to come up, you guys. So yes, please send us suggestions.
Yeah, we've had so much fun. And really, I mean, one thing about this doing a weekly show that we've been doing for nearly a year, is that we've gotten such great suggestions from all of you. I mean, we would never be able to come up with ideas for week after week after week if it weren't for all of you. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So, Day, we are talking about all of the 70s splendor that is All the President's Men.
Where do we start, Margot? I mean,
okay. I've never read this book. I've seen the movie. I had forgotten how much of the movie has just been kind of entered into pop culture and lines like "Follow the Money," which is not in the book, by the way. All kinds of iconic scenes, but I had never read this book. It is riveting.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. I couldn't put it down. I thought it was kind of interesting because we read last week The Perfect Storm by Sebastian Younger. Mm-hmm. And in a similar vein, you know, at the beginning of the book, like, you know what happens. You know who goes to jail. Certainly a 70s audience would have known, mm-hmm. you know, exactly who went to jail and for how long. And that the president resigned, like, you know, all that going in. And yet it is such a nail biter of a book. It's so dramatic. And on the flip side of it, what's cool about it, and I think Robert Redford talks about, like, one of the things that intrigued him about the book is that, yes, on the one hand, it's like super dramatic. I mean, the highest of stakes. But at the same time, it shows just how much of a slog it was for them. You know, the phone call after phone call after phone, knocking on door after door after door, and the footwork and the dead ends and all of that that goes into it. I mean, it's just, it's great. And I think just right from the get-go, you're in. I loved it.
Yeah, it's great. I loved it too. So I've been a big fan of the story, you know, and I have gotten kind of a history geek. I grew up in a family of history geeks, so we're all kind of into it. I love the movie Dick that stars Kirsten Dunst and Michelle Williams.
That movie.
It's so fantastic. If you watch this movie, you'll love that movie even more because they just take so much of the material and satirize it. But it's the story of Richard Nixon, and then Margot and I, we were talking, like, we've been both the last week. I've been going through so many podcasts and on YouTube looking up all these documentaries, and there's this Amazon series about Watergate, and it was just fascinating what's going on. And I don't know about you, but so many times I'm like, wow, what's old is new again. You know, it's the same.
It's
treachery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can't, of course, you can't help but compare it to contemporary politics, but but the hubris and the audacity and the bumbling idiocy of some of these schemes.
Yeah.
One thing I can't, just as a general, it's so high stakes, and it really, you can't help but walk away with a tremendous and deep admiration for the field of journalism, and where these guys are really putting their lives on the line, and their bosses are really putting their necks on the line. I mean, not just putting their necks on the line that, like, oh, people will stop buying your newspaper, but like the government may shut you down and put you in jail. It's just staggering to me. And to, you know, in context also, if you've ever seen the movie The Post.
Yes, I just saw that the other day.
The one where Meryl Streep plays Katharine Graham, who owns the Washington Post. Tom Hanks plays Ben Bradley, who is played by, what is your name?
Jason Robards.
Jason Robards. Thank you. These things are sort of happening almost like right on top of each other. These two immense gambles. And just before we went on the air, tellingly, I saw this really cool, very short documentary. It was like a behind the scenes making of the movie that was done. And it's Robert Redford, and he's interviewing Woodward and Bernstein, and he interviews Ben Bradley. And Ben Bradley says, now this is Ben Bradley, who you see what happens to him in this book and in this movie, and who also is the Pentagon Papers guy. Mm-hmm. He says that he feels that Woodward and Bernstein, you know, what they were attempting to do was the single greatest long shot in journalism. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is really saying something. It's amazing.
Wow.
So this and they kind of stumble into it.
Well, they totally stumble into it. So let's talk about our writers. And we always talk about that. And then, like, here we go. Sometimes I've got a paragraph or two to read. Sometimes I have a fun little story to tell. I mean, these are two incredibly interesting men who've done so many things. And so how do I, you know, we could just do a whole show about Woodward and Bernstein, but we're not going to. I mean, we want to give their background and then go into the book and then go into the movie. But they were two very different men. Bob Woodward was Republican. He was in the Navy. He went to Yale. He was college educated. He was the quiet one. He was the one that would knock on every single door till 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Bernstein was younger. His parents, he found out, he said later, were admitted communists. They were part of the Communist Party. He was a rebel.
Yeah.
He dropped out of college. He had longer
completely
hair.
Different.
Yes. And they were like oil and water. And they admit, like, they never would have been friends in real life if it weren't for this. They're just too different. Mm-hmm. But Woodward was great because he would do that shoe leather stuff, you know, just calling and knocking on the doors. And then Bernstein was this great writer, and he's really tenacious and really trying to get people to pay attention and really, you know, offer their details. And so they stumble upon basically the Democratic headquarters at the Watergate Hotel. They were broken into, and it was the dumbest burglary ever. And it was, you know, figuring the people that were in charge and behind it. But they, like you said, it was brazen. It's also something I don't think enough people know how popular Richard Nixon was before this. I had no idea.
Me neither. And right. You know what's so funny? You know, I live in Southern California. He was from California. He was a big California guy, retired in San Clemente, which is like 40 minutes away from where I live. I did not realize that he won re-election with 61% of the vote.
Yeah.
61%!
I think it was only Massachusetts that he lost.
And he was a ruthless, you know, notoriously ruthless campaigner from the very, very beginning of his political career. He was known to just, you know, kind of no blow was too low for
right.
Richard Nixon when it came to campaigning. But I think people didn't realize that kind of went below the surface as well, which is what we learned. I mean, another thing I came away with, I was surprised too about that, Margo. And another thing that I was also had forgotten, I know I learned this at some point, you know, he's a very complicated political figure. The tapes tell us a lot about his racism and anti-Semitism. He arguably delayed desegregation, pandered to racists in the South. But on the other hand, he helped initiate affirmative action. He's the reason we have the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. Mm-hmm. He backed the Equal Rights Amendment. A very complicated guy.
And then there's the story of there's the podcast Slate's Slow Burn, and the first season is all about Watergate, and it's like Martha Mitchell and everything. It's just fascinating. And then he had Spiro Agnew as his vice president, and I knew nothing about him. And then I started looking at him like, he was a monster. And then
he really was.
And then he had to resign. Thank you. But he should have gone to jail, but he didn't. It was ridiculous. But anyway, before that, so Nixon ran against Kennedy in the early 60s. And it's a famous thing that they were on television and that people listened to the debate, thought Nixon won, but people saw the debate, thought Kennedy won. Kennedy was young and sexy. He was about new things. And when Nixon lost, it was sort of like, oh, he was gone from politics. And then he's a very awkward man. And thinking about late 60s, early 70s, and he's the one that got 18-year-olds the right to vote. He pushed that through. He had the young vote.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
It's really interesting. Me too. Very surprised because he's painted with such a broad brush in our culture. For those of you who are not from the United States that are listening, he resigned. He was going to be impeached. His own party encouraged him to resign. So he's kind of a broad figure in our culture, and mocked, but one of the takeaways for me in learning all these things about Nixon or seeing them through the lens of this book and in a broader context was that, with all the underhanded things that he did, I think he would say that his ultimate measure of everything was the good of the country. I think he really believed that what he thought was best for the country was best for the country. And therefore, anything that he had to do to get his agenda achieved, no matter how low or possibly illegal, was fair game because it was in service of the good of the country. And I think that's ultimately why he resigned, too, was not to put them through the having to impeach and try and all of that. But, it was extremely misguided.
Yes.
but I think that everyone seems to agree that was his motivation. Unfortunately, he was an introvert, someone who never let a grudge go, felt slights and was kind of prone to revenge. And so these things tripped him up. These were his character flaws. But the way this story unfolds, you can see why the ham-handedness of it, the way that they did this Watergate was part of a whole network of kind of espionage and sabotage of the president's political opponents. And it sounds so preposterous. So for the White House to come out and say, well, this is ridiculous. Why would we ever do this? You believe them.
Yeah. So it's called All the President's Men because it turns out all these men that worked for the president, they were very, very loyal to him. And there was Haldeman and Ehrlichman, and they were so loyal to him that they would do anything that he asked. And they had the same thing in mind. Whatever he's doing, it's for the best for the country. So anything that interferes with that, we have to cut it off at the knees. And it's some crazy stuff. They paid off the burglars, Well, what happens when you do something like that is that it becomes blackmail. So you have to pay.
Right.
That's why I always say, I don't believe a lot of conspiracy theories because nobody can keep a secret. Someone's always going to blab. Someone's always, right? Information is currency in and of itself. One of the men's wives was on a flight to Chicago. The plane crashes. They find her. She had $10,000 on her. She was one of those people, she was taking her husband's pay. I mean, just how did they cover this up? But they did for a very long time. But it was because, and Woodward and Bernstein, they totally screwed up the first time they wrote about it. The man that they quoted in the article refused to identify it. And so they almost got in a lot of trouble. They screwed up along the way. But, and I don't, in the movie, they don't have Katharine Graham, right? That's in the post, but I don't see her. I don't remember her anywhere.
No, I don't think you ever see her. She's mentioned in the book quite a bit. And there's a point where she takes a meeting. I can't remember if it's with both of them or if it's just with Woodward, just to kind of say we're putting our necks out for you guys. You know what you're doing, right? You got this, right? And they were like, yeah, we got this. But that's not in the movie at all. And the other thing, about Watergate in particular, and this whole like espionage, sabotage of political opponents in general that I found laughable. I don't know. He goes to all this trouble. He is breaking the law. He, meaning the president, he's overseeing all this operation. He knows that this is on his orders, basically. He knows they're breaking the law. He's sending them to break into the Democratic headquarters and all of this underhanded this and that. And the guy was a shoo-in for this election. Mm-hmm. Like the McGovern was not ever a threat. His opponent was never a serious threat to him. And he goes the hubris again and the grudge, the grudge holding. He can't not do everything he can to destroy his opponent, even when this opponent is zero threat to him. And because of that, that's what takes him down.
And that in his, he recorded himself doing it.
Oh gosh.
I mean, on top of
that. Yes, on top of that. It's extraordinary.
It's really extraordinary. It's very like Shakespearean, this man. Mm-hmm. Like he had so much power and he had young people, old people liked him. He seemed stable. That's the whole thing, that he was stability. A lot of people voted for him, especially the second time, because he promised he was going to get everybody out of Vietnam and that just sort of was like dad in charge, that kind of thing. And there was enough craziness that went on with the 60s and the early 70s that's why people went along with it. And then it turns out he was crazier than the rest of them, but all of them put together. I mean, just on his own, the things he says on those tapes. And then the bootlickers that just like completely follow him lockstep and try and ruin other people's reputations.
Yeah. There's this moment at the end of the book where I can't remember who it is in the Nixon camp says to one of the journalists, why on earth would you do this? Like, why would you risk so much for this idiocy? And their answer is basically like, well, the other side's doing it. Mm-hmm. And so the journalist goes to the other side and says like, they said you guys are engaging in just as underhanded thing. and the Democratic campaign guy's like, what? It never even occurred to us. I mean, maybe that put the idea in his head. I don't know, but it's just like that. You assume that the paranoia, too. I mean, just over that just touches everything. That you assume that they are doing it to you when that's not going on at all. There's zero evidence that was happening at all. It's just staggering. It's just such an amazing story, and also their tenacity and. Yes, they had this inside guy who we now know is Mark Feld. We'll talk about that in a second. But they had this inside guy who was sort of guiding them, and other people too who were high up who couldn't go on the record. But that they got anything on the record, let alone enough to publish the story, let alone enough to get the president to ultimately resign and get these people to go to jail. And again, even though you know that's what's going to happen, you can't believe that's what's going to happen as you're reading the story.
Well, and so we should say, so the book comes out June of 74, and Nixon then resigns 2 months later. So everybody was reading this all summer. I mean, all this stuff that's going on. I mean, that's Nixon did not want to resign. He was really dragging it. He thought he could do it. He thought he could get out of it. He always thought he could get out of it. But eventually it all just brought him down. And that's why. And it became, Nixon with the two fingers salute and all the way he spoke and his profile. I mean, there's so many things about him that became a caricature. But when you learn more about just almost the banality of like how bad he was behaving and just like every day, I don't know why he did it. Years later, he would go to Giants games. Like he was a big football fan and supposedly he would like call the Giants owner and about plays and things like that. Like he was a kook. He had a lot of problems with power.
I don't know. And that's what I was wondering, about him was, is it a corruption caused by the power? I'm not so sure because this need of his to absolutely obliterate anybody who's a hint of a threat goes back way, 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 way back, you know, before he was anybody. And I wonder if, I don't know if it's that or if it's that it's the power or if it's a combination of both. Yeah. I'm not sure. I saw an interview. Oh, and I put an absolutely remarkable drunk history, one of my favorites,
yes,
in the Facebook group about Martha Mitchell and how she actually blabbed about Watergate way before Woodward and Bernstein.
Yes. And she told a woman reporter who had a woman's page in the Washington Post.
Yeah, like Helen Thomas, who now is considered the White House reporter, but this is the 70s.
Right. And so it was like in the woman's page. That's where you put recipes and stuff like that. And that's where she put. So Martha Mitchell, so her husband, John Mitchell, was high up in the Nixon organization. And Martha, there's this great episode from Slate Slow Burn, which is just all about Martha. And she was this very funny lady from Arkansas. And what she would do is she would listen in on everything her husband did. And she'd get kind of drunk and then call reporters until midnight, 1 in the morning. Constantly giving away, right? And then turns out that her husband had somebody break into their home and shoot her up with sedatives to
yeah, okay, so up. The whole thing that starts all the President's Men and Woodward and Bernstein is that Woodward is sent to cover the arraignment of the five Watergate burglars. And for the most part, they seem like rinky-dink guys, you know, thugs, basically, except for one, Frank McCord, and who in the arraignment kind of mumbles that his previous employer was the CIA. Now, it turns out McCord, this is how Martha knew that, like, oh, crap, this is very serious. It goes straight to the top, and my husband is up to his neck in this. McCord was John and Martha Mitchell's daughter's security detail. So they knew, Martha knew this guy like super well. This was the guy who's in charge of keeping her daughter alive. So yeah, so then if you watch The Dark History, which is, it's again, it's one of my favorites. She calls up Peloton. She's like, it's about to go down, y'all. which is not unlike how she sounds. But while the book was being written, and when the book comes out, everybody's just always, because Deep Throat is not in the articles. Deep Throat is only in the book. Mm-hmm. So when the book comes out, people are like, oh, they had inside people like guiding them, and who's Deep Throat? And there's all the speculation for years. Was Deep Throat like several people? Was it made up altogether? Were they just guessing? So Deep Throat, we now know, is Mark Felt, who was the second in command at the FBI. Now, while the book was being assembled, Bernstein was married to Nora Ephron. The writer, Nora Ephron, wrote Silkwood, When Harry Met Sally, very, very famous. Bernstein is, and we'll talk about this when we talk about the movie. Bernstein's the kind of a womanizer.
Yes.
So it didn't go well. And the result was the movie Heartburn, which Nora Ephron wrote about the experience about Bernstein cheating on her. But anyway, Nora Ephron's like super smart. And she figured out real quick from the notes that were kind of just lying around the house that Deep Throat was Mark Felt, second in command of the FBI. And she told like freaking everyone. And there's this account where she says, I would give speeches to 500 people and someone would say, do you know who Deep Throat is? And I would say, it's Mark Felt.
Which is crazy.
It's hilarious. So she was just going around telling everybody, but nobody was listening to her.
Well, that's a book we'll definitely cover one day. It's on our list because that's a great movie and it's a really interesting film. But yeah, he was the womanizer and Woodward was the more studious one. And then Woodward had his own kind of scandals. He wrote a book about John Belushi called Wired, And then, this was really annoying, but like a year and a half ago, he interviewed Jodie Cantor and Megan Toohey. They wrote She Said, which is all about Harvey Weinstein and the Me Too movement. He would ask them questions about like, well, was that really rape what he did? Or was that, or that more like performing foreplay? Yeah. So nobody's perfect here. I mean, everybody, you know, for the book and the film. So this book comes out and then there's the trials that happen and Rosemary, the secretary, she has to go and she has to like demonstrate, like there's 18 minutes missing from a tape.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I by accident, like, you know, oops, I forgot to hit the button. And they're like, okay, we have to go to the White House and see this set up. There's no way she could have just missed this. But there's so many characters in this. I mean, how do you even keep this all together? I mean, that's the the problem that they had when they had to come up with the movies. Like, how do we adapt this?
It's interesting because there are so many people involved in this scheme that they at all thought that they were going to get away with it is incredible, because mm-hmm. you can't have that many humans
right.
involved that are scattered all over the country. And I think the book does a pretty good job of helping you keep it straight.
Yes.
I got a little bit lost just a couple of times, but for the most part, I feel like I was able to follow it. And one of the things that kind of comes up over and over again, and I don't know if who's responsible for writing this, because, you know, again, they're both working on it together, but Woodward at least says that at that time that Bernstein was the better writer. And I have to say, you know, having read some of Woodward's mm-hmm. Work since, I can sort of see now the difference between a Bob Woodward work and a Woodward and Bernstein work, at least. Mm-hmm. It's again, it's a nail biter. It really keeps you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Joan Didion did a whole criticism of Bob Woodward's writing and why he needs kind of, cause she says he's just kind of dry. He just kind of gives facts. Whereas Bernstein's
very dry. Yes. Yes.
And Bernstein's more of the, let's get the pizzazz. Let's get them in the first paragraph. Because if you don't get them in the first paragraph, they're not going to read the rest of it. It doesn't matter what you yep. wrote, which is true. Which, you know, who has time? So should we go to the movie?
Yeah. Just one more thing. One more thing I don't understand about Bob Woodward. And my husband pointed it out to me, and now it's all I hear. I don't get his accent. What is that accent? He says the word R-E-P-O-R-T-E-R, his profession.
Yes.
He pronounces it reporter, like it's R-A-P-P-O-R, reporter. And he talks about reporting and the Republican Party. I'm so curious about his accent. He's from Illinois.
Yeah.
But I don't know anybody. It's still, is it like a Da Bears kind of thing? I don't know. Not sure.
I don't know. I didn't catch that.
But it's become more pronounced with age. Like when you watch, I wonder if he's like trying to tone it down in the Watergate era appearances that he did. But now it's very, very pronounced. And now, again, I'm mentioning it to all of you. So now you'll hear it every time you see Bob Woodward on television. And let's talk about this movie.
All right. So let's start with the trailer.
Base one to unit one. Base one to unit one.
Hold it, you mother! Hold it! Police!
There's been a break-in at Democratic headquarters. They were bugging the place.
Woodward, Bernstein, you're both on the story now. Don't get up.
Redford.
I'm Bob Woodward of the Washington Post. Mr. Markham, are you here in connection with the Watergate burglary?
I'm not here.
Hoffman.
Hi, this is Carl Bernstein of the Washington Post, and I was just wondering if you can remember
the President's Men, the story of the two young reporters who cracked the Watergate conspiracy.
White House.
Howard Hunt, please.
He might be in Mr. Colson's office.
Who's Charles Colson? Did you know Howard Hunt?
Well, the White House said he was doing some investigative work.
What do you say?
They stumbled into leads.
Certainly it comes as no surprise to you that Howard was with the CIA.
No surprise at all.
They tripped over clues.
We'd like to see all the material requested by the White House.
All White House transactions are confidential.
This whole thing is a cover-up. It's right on our nose.
And piece by piece, they solve the greatest detective story in American history.
There is no way the White House can control the investigation.
I don't want to say anymore, okay?
Have you been threatened if you tell the truth?
Is there a cover-up?
Don't you understand what you're on to?
Mitchell knew?
Of course, Mitchell knew.
Woodward! Bernstein! Get in here!
At times, it looked as if it might cost them their jobs.
You guys are about to write a story that says the former attorney general, the highest-ranking law enforcement officer in this country, is a crook.
Their reputations.
Why is the Post trying to do it? I don't know.
Perhaps even their lives.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I think is very significant in this movie, I know I'm watching All the President's Men, it's the typewriters. It's all the typewriters going all the time. It's typewriters were so loud. They were such a loud way of writing back
in the
day.
It's hard to describe to people what that is exactly what an office sounded like in the 1970s. And I'm sure it was just on steroids if you were working in a newspaper office. But that was one of the things that I was a little confused or not quite clear. You know, we have our filmmaker.
Alan
what
Pakula.
Is your name? Pakula, thank you. Mm-hmm. And Robert Redford bought the rights to the story. He was very intrigued by how the story was came about, more so than what happens in the story. And so Robert Redford is talking a lot about the choices in the movie, more than the filmmaker is or the director is per se. And so anyway, I saw this thing where Robert Redford was saying that was a, although that's how it was, he wanted very much that constant sound of the typewriters, again, to kind of bring home the slog of it, the day-to-day tediousness of this work and trying to get these leads. Like, it wasn't just like, get a lead here and you get a lead there, da 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 da. It was just like this drone of typewriters and phone calls. But that is what it sounded like.
Mr. Bernstein?
Yes, ma'am.
I was wrong.
I beg your pardon?
The truth is I don't have a card that says Mr. Hunt to any material. I don't remember getting the material for... I do remember getting the material for somebody, but it wasn't for Mr. Hunt.
Right.
The truth is, I didn't have any requests at all for Mr. Hunt.
Oh.
The truth is, I don't know any Mr. Hunt.
I was just wondering if any... if you have any books that... Hello?
Yes, we're checking that information now. We'd just like to find out just what it was that Hunt did when he worked out as a White House consultant on the Pentagon Papers. Yes, I would appreciate that if you could. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Just got off the phone with the White House librarian. You want to look at the notes on it?
Well, this is some stuff in the Eisenhower campaign 1952 that Hunt was connected with. Did you call the White House communications office?
No, I just got off the phone with the librarian.
Yeah, that's
I remember it well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Our writer is William Goldman. He won an Academy Award for this. We've talked about it before. We talked about Princess Bride. This is another thing that's crazy, that this movie comes out in 1976. We know what happened. He had resigned 2 years before, like the trials,
yeah.
Right? They had an $8 million budget. It did $70 million. In 1976. That's incredible for a thriller an office thriller where there's hardly any cursing. There's no nudity. There's no shootouts. Like it's just about Watergate. Like I all knew what the story was, but it's so well done. So we have Carl Bernstein as Dustin Hoffman. We talked about him when we talked about Hook. Is this our first Robert Redford movie that we've talked about?
I think
about?
It might be.
Great people. There's Jack Warden. There's Martin Balsam, Hal Holbrook, who's just perfect as Deep Throat. I mean, and Jason Robards, who I adore, as Ben Bradley. He's fantastic. Ned Beatty, Stephen Collins is in this movie. It's just packed with really great people. Jane
what about
Alexander?
Meredith Baxter.
I forgot.
Meredith Baxter.
She was so pretty. She's
so pretty.
Oh, my goodness. But yeah, there's great people in this movie, and it's just... like the book. It's just like the...
Oh,
go ahead.
Did you see Flo from Alice?
Yes, Polly.
Margaret.
Oh my God. Polly, what's her last name? Oh, she's fantastic.
Holiday?
Yes, Polly Holiday. Yes, she played, it was the show Alice. And she would say, Mel, kiss my grits. And she had like a big hairdo. And she's also in Gremlins, the first Gremlins movie. She's the old lady.
Oh, yes.
But she's
That's
really
right.
pretty
I
too.
Forgot.
Yeah, she looks great.
Yes.
It's just the mid-70s and there's just lots of like phone booths and like stuff like like a phone booth. Can you imagine going into one now? Like, no.
No.
All the smoking everywhere on your desks in the
so
elevator.
Much smoking.
A lot of smoking. And they really do build the mystery of like what they're doing and what the stakes are. And they didn't pick anybody to play any of the Nixon people. So that's all archive. That's just regular news footage.
Yeah, except for Sloan,
right?
Who, you know, had left. But no, I think that's a great choice too. That the use of the actual news footage, they completely built the Washington Post office. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a replica office of the set. Ben Bradley said it, like, it was absolutely perfect. He said he brought his daughter to the set. You can imagine, like, you know, yeah, you go see Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, like, okay. And he said that his daughter, like, walked in to the set and, like, put her jacket down on the chair that she always would use at the real office. And it just really felt like the real office. Now, I don't know about you, but I spent a great deal of my watching this movie time trying to make up my mind. Do I want a red desk with a red chair or a green desk with a green chair or a blue desk with a blue chair?
I used to be really attracted to the color red, but lately I've been going more towards blue. So I probably would do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the art direction did get won an Oscar for this movie. I mean, this movie was a big deal. There were multiple Oscar nominations going around, including for Jason Robards as Ben Bradley. I love the fact that Ben Bradley went on to buy the home in Grey Gardens. Do you know that documentary, Grey Gardens?
That's right.
He bought their home.
He's a fascinating guy.
Really, really is. It's just fantastic. I really enjoy this movie. It's in the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress for being culturally, historically significant. And yeah, it is the story. I mean, all this stuff we've just been saying.
Yeah.
There's so many people. There's so many writers, and there's F. Murray Abraham is in this movie.
Oh, that's right.
Cop. I mean, it's just unreal. But it's just, like she said, it's a lot of shoe leather. It's a lot of just calling people. There are a lot of quiet scenes. Like, you get the rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat at the office, and then
the quiet.
I was pulling clips. I'm like, shh. What is he saying? What? It's so quiet.
Where are you?
Stuck. Story is stalled on us.
And you thought I'd help?
I'll never quote you. I wouldn't quote you even as an anonymous source. I mean, you'd be on deep background. You can trust me, you know that. Come on. Can you tell me what you know?
You tell me what you know.
Hunt worked for Coulson at the White House. Hunt was investigating Kennedy and Chappaquiddick.
That should tell you a lot. What else?
We're beginning to hear a lot about a lawyer creep named Gordon Liddy, who's... Gordon Liddy, who was fired by Mitchell because he wouldn't talk to the FBI.
You'll hear more. Liddy put his hand over a candle and he kept it there. He kept it right in the flame until his flesh was burned. Somebody said, "What's the trick?" And Liddy said, "The trick is not minding."
The story is dry. All we've got are pieces. We can't seem to figure out what the puzzle is supposed to look like. John Mitchell resigns as the head of CREEP and says that he wants to spend more time with his family. I mean, that sounds like bullshit. We don't exactly believe that.
Oh, but it's touching. Forget the myths that the media has created about the White House. The truth is, these are not very bright guys, and things got out of hand.
Hunt's come in from the cold. Supposedly, he's got a lawyer with $25,000 in a brown paper bag.
They follow the money.
What do you mean? Where? Well, I can't tell you that. But you could tell me that. No, I have to do this my way. You tell me what you know, and I'll confirm. I'll keep you in the right direction if I can, but that's all. Just follow the money.
There were a couple of things. There are a couple of things that are not in the book that are in the movie, but one is actually showing the burglary. The burglary is not in the book, obviously. One of the things I thought was really funny about the production was that the first screenplay apparently was not great, and Woodward and Bernstein didn't like it. And so Bernstein and Nora Ephron, who again were married at the time, they wrote a version of the script. And apparently in their version of the script, Bernstein is irresistible to the ladies.
Well, that's like my favorite part of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That one scene, I think, must come from their version. There's a couple little moments they said that they kept of that version of the script. And so that scene of, actually the two scenes of Dustin Hoffman as Bernstein flirting to get information, that's not in the book at all. That's just in the movie.
No, that's, and apparently that's what he's really like. And Dustin Hoffman, I'm sure.
He seems real good at it.
I love the, we were talking about the movie Dick. It's Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall. He plays the Dustin Hoffman part, but they give him a wig and he's always like flouncing around with this wig.
It's amazing.
And Will Ferrell is Bob Woodward. It's fantastic.
One of my favorite moments in the book and in the movie is it's near the end when Deep Throat tells Woodward that everybody's life is in danger, basically.
Right.
And Woodward has to tell Bernstein, and this is in the book too, that Woodward, you know, kind of, it tells Bernstein to come over to his place. He puts on a record of Rachmaninoff piano concerto. Bernstein, in the book, Bernstein is like, oh gosh, this guy's such a nerd. I can't believe this is like, this is the music you put on. But something I found out this morning, that Rachmaninoff piano concerto, that is the exact music that Richard Nixon would blast when he was drinking and ruminating about his plight in Watergate. You know, there's famous stories about him being drunk and talking to the paintings in the White House. And he would also blare.
I'm not shocked.
The same music. Isn't that amazing? So I love that scene in the movie. So there's a few things that are a little bit different, like the whole thing about the flower pot is in the book, but it's a little bit different the way it's handled. There's just a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of steps that are involved in the book to get each little tidbit of information. And you just don't have, I mean, the movie's long, but you, at some point you have to, you know, condense some of this stuff.
I totally recommend that if you have an Amazon subscription there, it's just a series and it's just called Watergate, and there's 6 episodes, and they act out his tapes. Like he said the most vulgar things about like the publisher of Washington Post, that he was, you know, he said horrible, horrible things, and they edited out at the time, but he used the N word and like you said, there's times where he just sounds like a raving maniac. Like he's so angry that in this thirst and this for power and just having control over everything and get this guy on the job. And who are the Jews on that list for the Democrats? Find me all the Jews. He said that. I mean, it's very interesting character. I mean, a total creep, but very interesting.
Yeah. I'm just really fascinated by the whole thing. And just how could you, I just don't understand how you possibly could think that you would have the whole freaking world involved in this illegal scheme and just think that that was going to fly.
It's amazing. People still try to do that. And it's like, and there's more, it's nowadays, there were just sort of like, I think it was in all the President's Men Revisited. They were talking to young journalists and they said, well, nowadays you would tweet out this thing and then someone would do a screenshot and then they would, like, it would all just be so much different. I mean, it was a different world then.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't have the immediacy of, you could go and knock on a door. And I love that they have that scene where he's talking to the young woman and he's in her place for 6 hours, Bernstein. and, you know, just to get an initial out of her. It's a different time. I love that. That's such a great documentary. It's like a little baby Rachel Maddow.
Yes. Yes.
Just little apple cheeked, fresh faced Rachel Maddow and others. It's really good. It's a great, great book. It's long, you know, for reading in a week, but seriously, I just could not put it down. I think I read it in 2 days.
Yeah, same.
Just riveting.
And then I just wanted Amazing. To watch all the documentaries about it.
Me too. Me too. I mean, up to the right before we recorded, I've been watching stuff all morning. I'm amazed. I'm not amazed that Woodward and Bernstein stumbled on the story. I think, you know, somebody would have stumbled on this story. What I think is remarkable, especially for the age, like we were just saying, without social media, without mobile phones, that they were able to get what they got in the amount of time that they did, you know, mm-hmm. not that long after re-election. That to me is incredible. That it seems to me like with the technology that they had available to them, that it should have taken them a much longer to put that story together.
And there was other people who were on it too. I mean, the CBS News was really on top of the story, and they were threatened. Bailey was threatened by the Nixon organization. Like they had their enemies list, and when they published the list, people on there were like, it was like all the, of course, New York Times and the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Washington Post, and then they had people like Cher and John Lennon and sort of like Bill Cosby. It was like, wow, he just, you know, he had his enemies. He was one of those people. He needed to vanquish somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Why the hell couldn't you tell me it was a phone?
Woodward says the phones aren't safe.
Can't trust them.
Come on in.
We can't come inside.
Woodward says there's electronic surveillance.
Surveillance, who's doing it?
It's being done. People's lives are in danger.
Wait a minute.
Maybe even ours.
What happened to that justice source of yours?
Well, I guess I made the instructions too complicated because he thought I said hang up when I just said hang on.
Oh, Jesus.
The story is right. Haldeman was the fifth name to control that fund, and Sloan would have told the grand jury.
Sloan wanted to tell the grand jury.
Why didn't he?
Because nobody asked him. The cover-up had little to do with the break-in. It was to protect covert operations, and the covert activities involved the entire U.S. intelligence community.
Did Deep Throat say that people's lives are in danger?
Yes.
What else did he say?
He said everyone is involved.
You know the results of the latest Gallup poll? Half the country never even heard of the word Watergate. Nobody gives a shit. You guys are probably pretty tired, right? Well, you should be. Go on home. Get a nice hot bath. Rest up 15 minutes. Then get your asses back in gear. We're under a lot of pressure, you know, and you put us there. Nothing's riding on this except the First Amendment of the Constitution, freedom of the press, and maybe the future of the country. Not that any of that matters. But if you guys fuck up again, I'm going to get mad.
I guess I really loved reading it. I really loved reading it. It made me feel very hopeful that we have the institution of journalism that we do in the United States, and that it has persevered mm-hmm. through so many, many challenges. Some of you may know that, you know, my job, I'm not a journalist, but I work for a journalistic organization. So I'm newsroom adjacent. Mm-hmm. So I get to see a lot of great journalists at work. It takes a very special person to just, you know, so doggedly pursue the truth and try to check everything and go back and check again. And also, you know, be willing to make mistakes and be willing to say, oh, we messed that up. You know, Woodward and Bernstein to this day go, oh, why did we do that? Why did we make that mistake?
Right.
I wish we hadn't done that. They don't have a pride about it of not wanting to admit that they made a mistake. You know, I'm thinking of that Frost Nixon interview.
Yes.
where Frost, like just on a silver platter, you know, to Nixon, just like serves him up the chance to redeem himself for the rest of time to the American public and history writ large. And he just cannot admit that he made any kind of an error, because again, he believes that he was doing it in service of the American people. This is what he's told himself.
When the president does it, it's not illegal.
Yeah. Whoa. Freedom. What? Yeah. So it was great. I just loved it. I just loved it. I highly recommend it. If you've never read the book, pick it up. You probably too will fall down the rabbit hole, as Margo and I have, of watching everything you can
about all these people,
about Nixon. And I didn't even, yeah, I just barely touched the tip of the iceberg of Agnew, by the way.
No, Agnew is a whole other, and that's another podcast called Bagman, which people have recommended in our Facebook group. And that's also mm-hmm. Rachel Maddow hosts it. And boy, he was a bad dude. He was getting away with.
He did not think he was acting for the good of the country.
No, he didn't care.
He did not care. And so, I mean, that to me was interesting, you know, that contrast of those two figures in particular, that on the surface, you could say, yeah, they were both bad. They both broke the law. They both had, you know, underhanded and this and that they were doing and for power and this and that. But I do feel that, true or not, that at least Nixon had convinced himself that he was acting in the interest of the country rather than himself. But Agnew was totally in it for himself.
Yeah.
This is all about himself and, yeah, getting what he could while he could.
And then, so then we had President Ford, and then Ford pardoned Nixon, which was a whole other thing. I mean, it's just a crazy time. It's just crazy news story. And the levels of just like how his tentacles were everywhere. And it's just incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So book versus movie.
Ooh, you know, and the movie is wonderful, but I have to say, at least for me right now,
yeah,
it's the end of inauguration week. I would give right now the edge to the book a little bit. I mean, I've seen the movie so many times and I love this movie. I think it's perfect. It's just perfect.
Yeah.
But even so, like the book, there were so many moments in the book where I gasped or laughed out loud or couldn't believe what I was reading. You know, it just really, the fact that they were able with their writing alone tell a story that I thought I knew in such a riveting way. I'm going to give the edge to the book.
You know, I'm going to do the same. I felt the same way. It's a thriller and it really happened.
And it really happened.
Yeah.
Scary. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's great. It's great. So what are we doing next?
Well, so you and I were talking and you brought up this idea for the next episode. And then we have a few for African American History Month, but starting with a Dolly Parton song, and it would be Jolene, and it would be for Heartstrings on Netflix.
Yay.
Guys, it's
talk about drunk, maybe my second favorite episode of Drunk History, by the way.
Jolene
is the Dolly Parton one. There's a Dolly Parton one about her leaving Porter Wagoner.
Yes.
With Rich Fulcher, who's like my favorite of all time. Yes. Yeah.
So that's going to be real simple.
I'm
you guys.
So excited.
It's only an hour long. It's really fun. It's a great song. And I'm really super excited to talk about it. And then we have some really cool ideas for February coming up.
We do. I love Jolene. I love that song.
Oh, it's wonderful. And then Dolly Parton, they had a podcast about her, Dolly Parton's America. That was fantastic.
Yeah, Dolly Parton's America.
That was a whole episode. And by the way, I should say that All the President's Men, it's on HBO Max right now. If you guys have HBO Max, you can go check that out. Be sure to sign up for our Patreon page if you're interested. That's Patreon. Thanks to VJ and Jackie for signing up there. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me at Brooklyn Fitchick for Twitter and Instagram, and my blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And guys, we'll be back excuse me, we'll be back next week with a new episode. I'm running out of water, Margo. So next week, everybody. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Book versus Movie podcast. We're a part of the Electronic Media Collective, and we follow the hashtags Potter and Family and Lady Pod Squad. You can find us on social media at Book versus a Movie. You just spell that all out for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can send us an email at bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to join our Facebook group, look for us under Book vs Movie Podcast Group in Facebook. Ask to join, and you may be lucky enough to get in. We also have a Patreon page if you want to support the show. Go to patreon.com and look for Book vs Movie Podcast. We record the show with our handy H6N, donated by those of you who were nice enough to contribute to the Patreon page. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.